Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land Podcast. So last week, we closed it out with Napoli Outsider. We are going to continue dropping some knowledge from Italy on the pod today with a great interview with my friend Alex Frosio from Gazzetta dello Sport. That will be at the end of the podcast, available to all. I think you will enjoy that as well. Since we had another exciting weekend of calcio, we are going to name our winners and losers. Man, it really feels like Serie A went from being directed from someone like David Fincher to Michael Bay, just explosions, goals like crazy. We'll recap everything that happened this weekend, which was quite exciting. But before we get to all that, I'm of course joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host, the show, Alex Goldberg. And this is something, Alex, that I touched upon with the other Alex at the end of the interview on Atalanta's mini crisis. So, you know, we were all pretty high on Atalanta going into the season, explosive team. They've now lost two games in a row in Serie A. We're recording this before they face Ajax in the Champions League, and what a fun game that's going to be. But aside from that, you know, I've been thinking a lot about Atalanta, and Alex Frosio tweeted this, that, you know, maybe adding all these exciting players on paper sounded like a great idea, but maybe it's not working out so well. And I was thinking, too, that often in life, even outside of football, you know, we make plans. If I get this, if I add this, and you might do something that's very logical and that makes a lot of sense on the surface, and then for some reason, it doesn't work out. So let's look at Atalanta. You know, they sold Kulusevski in January, made a fortune. He wasn't even on the team there. Sold Traore to Man United at the end of this window. Made a lot of money there, too. They've been reinvesting in the team. Very smart. They're improving the depth, they are keeping core players, they refurbish their stadiums. All things that you were like, that's really smart, that's what a club should do when they start getting all this extra revenue all of a sudden. But on surface, adding, when you add all these exciting pieces, Miranchuk, Lammers, some new wing backs, some new center backs, Gasperini is going to want to play with his new toys. And it did not work out well at all over the weekend. So what do you make about this, Alex? Especially a team like Atalanta that was such a well-oiled machine. You remember that Juve game where they had ball possession for an insane amount of time before goal. Like, everyone knows where to go. And then you start adding all these exciting players, especially in this COVID football with hardly any summer retreat or anything like that. So what do you make about that? And do you think sometimes less is more with football teams?
Well, to work backwards, less is certainly more at certain points. And I can't make a true parallel between Atalanta and Chelsea. Well, you can't really make a true parallel with any team right now in Chelsea in terms of who they acquired in the window. But right now, We're kind of finding out as Chelsea fans, well, like you just said, you can plan for all these things, you can write the team on paper, but it doesn't just happen then because you have that team. Sometimes even a team with less talent is the one that's more well-oiled and understands things. But for Chelsea and teams like that, it should take time. Now, to get to, so I do agree with less can be more. But to get to Atalanta specifically, before I even go deeper into the question, here's what I'm going to say. I'm not too worried about Atalanta. I'm really not. Because I look for the identity of Atalanta. The identity of them to me is a team that will smack you in the mouth and score a crap load of goals. Okay? So they started the season off 4-2 to Torino, won 4-2, four goals. Next game, 4-1 to Lazio, another four goal game for Atalanta. Does this sound like the Atalanta of last season? You're damn right it does. Next game, 5-2 to Calgary. Okay? Still sounds like the Atalanta of last season. Yep. Then they slip up against Napoli. And Napoli are a fun story in and of themselves. So, you know, all right, they slip up there. And then in the Champions League, I'm not even going to bother pronouncing the name of the team they played, but they beat them 4-0. So far, before I get to the most recent game, They have won all of their games except the Napoli one. And in all of those wins, David, they scored at least 4 goals. That sounds like the Atalanta I know. And now in the latest, probably the most disappointing result, you can say, losing 3-1 to Sampdoria. So I do think that, all right, the positivity is moving forward. You mentioned all those moves that aren't even all even football moves. It just feels like they're becoming more legitimate, more polished. They're running their club well. They're making good moves, even the outgoings. But I think when then you have a disappointing result and you're not having nothing but progression, things can look even more upsetting, more disappointing. So for me, I give credence to what you said. I think sometimes, yeah, bringing in new things, just new things to think about, can almost throw you off kilter. However, we're going to learn a lot about Atalanta soon. They play Ajax soon. They play Liverpool twice soon. They play Inter soon. So if we also lose the identity of Atalanta in those games, well, then I'm a bit more concerned. But right now, it just doesn't shake me too much, because what you said makes sense to me, that it could throw them off kilter a bit. But overall, when you look at their season so far in a vacuum, they've been more or less Atalanta. Just they might not have taken that next step just yet that those moves would make you think they would, if that makes any sense. So that's my answer on them. But David, what do you think might be holding them back in this moment?
Well, great job, Alex. Very well done. I like your measured approach. I think you've made a lot of sense there. And yeah, look, in general, in Serie A, to me, we really live at a time where it's incredibly difficult to predict anything. I saw yesterday was the 10-year anniversary of Paul the Octopus, who was guessing all those World Cup games. He passed away 10 years ago, and I have a feeling even Paul the Octopus would have a very hard time predicting games. Now it's like you never know what's going to happen. I mean, I know Atalanta was smacked around by Napoli, who have looked really, really good this season. And you can say, okay, but I don't think much was expected by Sampdoria. I don't know how much being away or home actually matters, but it was technically a home game for Atalanta. And we'll get to winners and losers and celebrate what Ranieri did in a second. But I don't think anyone kind of expected that. But we've really seen, like, Napoli, all the games they've played, they've done well, but they didn't show up for the Juve one. But on the pitch, they've been well. Aside from that, Milan obviously has been great. Yesterday, that game against Roma was a little wonky in the second half. But you look at the rest of the teams, there's really no one that has had much continuity in general. So I think Gasperini said he maybe experimented a little bit too much against Sampdoria. It's, I think, in a way, because it's so hard to have continuous training and they didn't have a summer retreat really to incorporate these new players, I think it makes sense for Gasperini now to try to get these guys some playing time as well. So let's see if that turns around. But I really do think there is again, I go back to, this is not just about football and life. Like, sometimes the best plans, like on paper, just don't work out the way they should. And I think another thing that's really important is I think now a lot of teams, when they see Atalanta on the schedule, they are circling that game because they know that's really an opportunity to make a statement when you go up against a team that has been a juggernaut in the short term. So very interesting. We'll continue to monitor Atalanta. They are playing Ajax today after we're recording. And that should be pretty great. If you love football, Ajax is coming up. What? I think they put up 11 goals now going up
13,
against Atalanta.
David.
That should
13.
Be a lot. 13. Yeah. So that should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I really like that matchup on paper. Ajax, as we know, they do lose stars like the latest one, Ziyech, but it doesn't really matter. They're always a team that plays a fun brand of football. And yeah, 13, and it was not a friendly. That's wild. All right. Well, if that was an Eredivisie segment, and if this was an Eredivisie podcast, they'd be in our winners and losers, but they're not. So David, let's transition. Let's start with our winners. Who are our winners from this weekend?
Yeah, so we had the first game last Friday, foggy game between Torino and Sassuolo, 3-3. We had a superb goal by Juricic, who is a De Zerbi favorite. This is he's the second team he's playing for The Zerbi Sassuolo's defense is an absolute mess. Their goalkeeper, Consigli, gave up goals, but still was one of the best players in the match. We then, on Torino's side, we have Belotti, who's now scored in three games in a row in Serie A on absolute fire. So he had another goal and another assist. Sassuolo, again, I think a lot of people would have expected Sassuolo to win this one. Torino kind of saved Giampaolo. I think another loss would have really increased the heat on his bench. So Giampaolo lives to see another day. Then we had Inter, who got off to a slow start in the first half against Genoa, who was playing very defensive in typical Maran fashion. But they do break out. Barella comes in. One of our listeners tweeted, you know, if last season as Brozovic goes, so did Inter, you can make a case that Barella is that guy. This year has been sensational, came off the bench. We had Lukaku, another goal, already had five. I feel really good about Lukaku being capocannoniere this season. Also, shout out to Darmian, a second strong performance in a row for Inter after in the Champions League. I do want to give a shout out to Genoa defender Goldaniga, who especially in the first half was quite good in that game. And then let's celebrate Ranieri. What a great win for Sampdoria against Atalanta. Like, aside from the Atalanta side of things, Sampdoria faced Lazio and Atalanta, two of the four teams that represent Italy in the Champions League, win both games, put up six goals in those games. So kudos to Ranieri. Really tremendous job. He got that team back together after Di Francesco got off to a slow start. He had done the exact same thing at Roma. Also want to highlight a couple of players on Sampdoria. Janko had a goal and an assist. Last week, we talked about left wing back Augello. I also want to give a shout out to Mezzala Damsgaard, who also plays on the left. Very good pace, strong player to watch on Sampdoria, who have this thing about discovering players abroad for cheap. And then we had Lazio's 2-1 win against Bologna. Ciro Immobile with another game. He passed Signori in the Lazio all-time list. He's now at 128. He's 21 goals shy of Silvio Piola, who has the most goals ever for Lazio. And then we had Luis Alberto with a nice goal as well. We had Napoli's comeback win against Benevento. Both Insigne brothers scores. One of them plays for Benevento. Also have to say, I'm pretty impressed with Pippo Inzaghi as a manager so far. And then we had a Calcioland favorite, Petagna, with a goal off the bench. I like that Napoli has Osimhen and Petagna, who bring really pretty different looks to the front line. Pretty intriguing. And Osimhen had probably his worst game since he's played in Serie A, and Petagna bailed him out. So I like Napoli's squad, as we talked about, have different looks that they can show teams. And then we had Fiorentina, who really needed a win when they were hosting Udinese. They go up 3-2. A brace by Castrovilli and an assist. Really, really stepping up his play after inheriting the number 10 jersey. Then we had Milenkovic with another goal. He's the highest scoring center back in Serie A the past few years. Then we had Cagliari put up four goals against Crotone. One of our listeners asked if we could take a deep dive on Cagliari. That's interesting. I agree. I'm going to have to try to find a good guest for that. Definitely a team that's pretty intriguing. João Pedro had a goal and an assist. Another Calcioland favorite. We've been talking about him for a while. We had Nandez, who's really turning into a great box-to-box midfielder in Serie A. We had, speaking of Ajax, Marin, one of their former prospects, had a very strong game in midfield. And on Crotone, I do want to highlight, I do like their front line. Simi, tall player that has some Serie A experience. We've seen him before. But there's this other striker called Messias, Brazilian player. Plays with some swagger. I like him. Definitely a fun player to watch. Check him out, Messias. I definitely think we're going to hear about him in this segment more often. Then we had Juve hosting Verona. What else can I say about Kulusevski? I've been telling you guys, I feel really good about that. I've been wrong about a lot of players. Even I didn't expect him to get off to such a fast start to Juve, had a goal off the bench. I had a bit of concerns because he came from a totally counterattacking system at Parma and has adapted really well to Juve's more ball possession. I think it's not going to be long that after Ronaldo, he's Juve's best player. That's how highly I think of him. And I think it's going to happen this season. But more importantly, I want to highlight Verona. I thought they played great. I was very high on Verona going into the season, despite losing three key players. I think people really underestimated them. Juric, just a great manager. Shout out to former Padova player, that's my hometown, Lovato, 20-year-old defender, was really excellent in this game, reminiscent of Kumbula, who led their line at 20 years old. So really excellent there. Zaccagni, who's kind of there, they call him their young striker, although he's 25. He had a good game. And Atalanta, another gem, Kali, who was there at Verona on loan, definitely a player to watch. He was very intriguing there. But I want to give a huge shout out to Juric. And one of our listeners made an excellent point, and I want to give him a huge shout out, because I tweeted that Verona are really kind of an old school Serie A team, because I was focusing more on how great they are defensively. But I have to say that's not really accurate, because, and I want to give him a shout out to the name, Amedeo 10, they press too high, possess too much, and make too many chances to be old school. They do terrorize. Very well said, Amedeo. You corrected me, and you are 100% correct. They are in an old school Serie A team in the sense of Catenaccio. They press super high. Very impressed with Verona. I love Juric. I think definitely a manager who next season will be on a top team. And then finally, we had a pretty crazy game between Milan and Roma. We don't like to talk about referees too much on this pod, but definitely some pretty interesting calls, to say the least, in the second half. What else is there to say about Ibrahimovic? Other big goal. He gets really Leao going, and Leao had maybe his best game at Milan yesterday. Very, very impressive. So Ibrahimovic and Pioli deserves a lot of credit here. Got Rebic, Kalanoglu, Frank Kessie going at the end of last season, and now we have Leao as well. I want to highlight on Roma, Kumbula had a goal, pretty solid defensively. That's the former Verona defender. So those are our winners for the weekend.
All right. Well, let's move on to the losers.
All right. Not too many, but they are pretty bad. We mentioned at the top, Atalanta have lost two in a row. I just want to pick a little bit on the two wing backs that replaced Hadebur and Gosens, who are as good a duo in Serie A. De Paoli, who arrived from Sampdoria, and Mojica arrived from abroad. They were really poor in this game. And we know Atalanta cashed in on Castagne. They need at least one of these two to emerge. On Juve, Bernardeschi, what else is there to say? I mean, it's absolutely comical that there were Juve fans that thought Kulusevski was going to be the new Bernardeschi. I hope these guys apologize to themselves, never mind anyone else, just for thinking that. Another disastrous game. I think Bernardeschi is even a worse Juve player than Isla, which is really saying a lot. And Ramsey, I don't want to pick on him too much because he was healthy enough to play. And with him, that's already a lot. But that was not his best moment playing for Pirlo. And then on Milan's game, we had backup keeper Tatarasanu. He was an absolute mess. We wish the best to Gigio Donnarumma as he recovers from COVID. But to me, although he hasn't been Milan's sporting director for a few years, Mirabelli is a big loser here, because they are paying third-string keeper Donnarumma's brother over what they're paying him, 1 million net, so 2 million gross a season. That's more than quite a few starting keepers in Serie A would add, and he's their third stringer. So if he's that bad that they have to go get a backup who's as bad as Tatarasanu, that's bad. And look, we know that that deal was really to make Donnarumma happy. But what a disaster that deal was. And then finally, we had the draw between Parma and Spezia, which is really a loss for both teams. And I say that because Spezia had a 2-goal lead, would have really been good for them to get an away win against a team that is in the relegation race. I do like their manager, Italiano, former Padova midfielder, by the way. And Parma, to me, yeah, they came back. But if they are drawing at home against Spezia, they're in trouble. And I think Parma should really be concerned. I'm not thrilled with the idea of buying all these young players when you're in the race to avoid relegation. That, to me, feels like a recipe for disaster, especially after you changed the manager. Okay, so before we get to Alex Prozio, which is going to be available to everyone, and I'm sure you guys will enjoy that, let's get to our patrons. As always, if you enjoy Calcioland, definitely consider becoming a patron. Have longer versions of the podcast, usually 15, 20 minutes extra, sometimes way more than that. We have extra interviews. Last week, we had a Napoli Outsider. If you also like reading articles, we have another tier where you get all the extra podcasts and articles. I use all the money that we raise on Patreon to cover production costs, pay our freelance writers, and the rest we donate to a great charity. I don't make a penny off it. It's a great program. If you enjoy Calcio, please join us. Hey, I am very excited to welcome our next guest. We had Napoli Outsider last week. We have Alex Prozio back today from Gazzetta dello Sport. So I'm very excited to talk Calcio with Alex. For those of you who haven't been that familiar with Alex's work, he's kind of our coach guru. He is the son of a very famous coach in Italy, knows a lot about tactics. We always like to take a deep dive with him. He is one of my favorite journalists at Gazzetta dello Sport. He's been writing recently on Sassuolo, and we'll get to that at the end of the interview as well. So Alex, my friend, always a real pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Ciao David, thank you so much for your words. It's too much, I think.
Well, you are definitely one of our favorites. And I always say one of the best things about having the podcast is having people like you that people in Italy are very familiar with. And it's great that we get to hear you in English mm-hmm. for people outside of Italy. So let's start with Juve, Alex. Mm-hmm. So Pirlo, another draw for Juve against Hellas Verona. I was very impressed with what Juric did. But, you know, now we have not a very large sample size, but we've seen Pirlo out there a few times with his team. So what do you make of Pirlo as manager so far?
My impression is that Pirlo is dealing with the struggles that every new manager has to deal, because we know that he never coached before. When you start coaching, you have to deal with problems, because you can have the best ideas in the world, but then there's the pitch, there's the game, mm-hmm. there are the opponents, and you have to be able to prepare a strategy that's a plan, let's say, if the things don't work, and if you don't have the players that you would like to have. I think about Cristiano Ronaldo, which is probably Juventus would have won the last three matches if Ronaldo was there, but he wasn't there. So usually you learn to deal with all these problems during your career. That's why you usually every coach starts from young people, young players, or youth teams, or teams from Serie B or Serie C, or lower teams in Serie A. Mm-hmm. He's coaching Juventus, so you cannot draw three games in a row, because you should win every game, you know.
Yeah.
And apart from the results, I say that I still cannot see what he wrote in his thesis, for example. Recoveries in the opponent half, the five players attacking. I don't see that. I still see good players playing by themselves, Think about Dybala, for example, or Kulusevski, Ramsey, so and so. I still don't see a team. He needs time, probably. I say it from the beginning because probably he will be one of the best coaches in the world, maybe. But he still needs time. I don't like this description of the maestro, of the coach that will be the best. Let him work. We'll see if he will be the best, if he will be able to coach Juventus or any other team.
Yeah, very well said. You know, it's interesting that's kind of similar. His former teammate Inzaghi at Milan was thrown there, but he had Primavera, and now he's done his gavetta, and it's starting to pay off a little bit. So I wanted to ask you about...
And I remember... I remember Milan Inzaghi that really struggled to score goals. I remember because I made many, many games of Milan Inzaghi. They couldn't score goals. And now you see Benevento from last year or this year, they can't score goals. They know how to score goals.
Yeah.
He learned during the years.
Absolutely.
And correcting his own ideas with what he had.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree with you. I've been impressed with him. So I wanted to ask you about Chiesa, Alex, because you cover the Under 21 very closely. Yes. You've watched a lot of Chiesa. I thought maybe his most impressive stretch was as a professional was when the Euro Under 21 was in Italy. So what do you make of Chiesa at Juve? Do you see this as he'll be able to make a big impact there?
Maybe in Italy. I think he's a player that in Italy can make a big difference. I'm not so sure that he can help in Europe, because that kind of player in Europe, you can have many like him, maybe. What I say is that he's the same player he was 3 or 4 years ago. He didn't improve in the last years. And I say that in his position, he should score at least, I think, 15 goals every year.
Yeah.
And he still doesn't. I can also say that he's not the player I would have bought at Juventus, because he plays in a position that you already have Dybala starting from right, going to the middle. You already have Kulusevski starting from right and going to the middle, cutting to the middle. You have Cuadrado that can push on the right. Juventus has many players who plays in that particular area. And for example, they don't have a player for the left wing. I think about, for example, Luca Pellegrini, that was given away to Genoa. I think he would have been a player that could have been useful for Juventus. Chiesa probably can play there, but it's not his favorite. It's not his favorite position, in my opinion. My opinion is that he is a right wing.
Yeah.
Since he doesn't score so many goals, he can provide assists. Then he can go for the crosses, playing on the wing.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about another young Italian player who's really, really impressed me, especially since Calcio came back from the break from the pandemic. And this is Barella. And I used to think Inter, usually, if Brozovic played well, Inter would do okay. But now it seems that other than Lukaku, Barella has become a really, really important player for them. So did you expect Barella to take a leap this year the way he has?
No. He became a really brilliant player. I remember him in Cagliari, and I thought he was he always provided quantity, you know?
Yeah.
Big runs, breaks. But now he's a quality player. He learned to score goals, to get into the penalty area. I really didn't expect him to be such a player, honestly. And I really think that probably Inter didn't think it, because at the moment, I think that he can play, I wouldn't say as a trequartista, but as an attacking midfielder, the position in which we expect Eriksen, for example.
Yeah.
But he's much more, I don't know how to say, electric and effective. I don't know how to say, but he can play in that position, and he would be better in that position. He's better in that position. So I really didn't expect him. Yes, I agree with you. With Lukaku, he's now the best player in Inter, the most decisive.
Yeah, just really saying a lot. So let's talk a little bit more about Inter. So last season, they gave up the least amount of goals in Serie A. Very different now. Now, to be fair, Bastoni's been out, and that's been had an impact, not a positive one. And they've kind of reinvented Kolarov as a center back in the back three. Do you think Inter is going to get their defense back on track and be more similar to the defense we got used to last season?
I don't know, because Inter is trying to change its system. They used to play with three midfielders that protected the back three. Now they're trying to play with two central midfielders and one going attacking. It could be Barella, as we said, or Eriksen, or maybe Vidal in the future. So it's obvious that the defense is more exposed. I think that there is also a problem of men, because as I wrote in my tweets, if you get Kolarov thinking to make him play in the back three, you're wrong. He can't play there. He's not a defender. He's not a proper defender.
Yeah.
In the penalty area, you have to mark the man. He doesn't. I have to say that Inter didn't have Bastoni for a period. De Vrij is still out. Skriniar is out for the COVID. So
yeah,
he's not the defense that should play. But there is, as I said, problem of system. Now they have, we can say, one midfielder less, so they're more exposed. And the defenders must be, more careful. Be more careful when they're marking.
Absolutely. So one tweet you had this weekend that really stood out to me is on Atalanta, because in a lot of ways, Atalanta gets all this revenue from Champions League, qualifying, going deep. They sell Kulusevski, they sell Traoré, who aren't even on the squad. They go out and buy some very intriguing players, Lammers and Miranchuk. Already shown flashes, but you made a really good point that sometimes in life less is more, and having all these extra options for a team that's really run a system that they know so well could be counterintuitive. So do you think maybe this problem of abundance could actually become into a downfall for Atalanta?
I was watching the game against Sampdoria. And I thought that in the last years, all the new players took time to get into the squad. I remember Freuler arrived in the first or the second year, and it took like half a year before getting into the lineup. Then the same Gosens, the same Castagne, the same Hattebor, they arrived when Spinazzola was there, when Conte was there. It takes time. And Gasperini now, he has a lot of players that can play immediately. You said, well, Lammers, excellent player. Miranchuk, excellent player. The same Malinowski last year. It takes time to get him into the squad. So all these players, I understand Gasperini, because if you have so many players, so many quality players, you want to play them. But maybe something is missing, is still missing. Maybe there's also a problem of an issue with the Champions League and the champion and the Serie A, because when you taste that music and you know you can do so well as they did a few months ago, you want to live those nights. And your mind maybe loses something when you play in Italy. But yes, the main issue is you have so many players. Muriel, the same. He didn't play as in the starting lineup for months. And still he's Muriel, and he scored so many goals from the bench. Yes, maybe, as I said, too many players, too good. You want to let them, you want to play them all, but you can't.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one team that I would say is striving without using too many players is Milan, because they've had really a remarkable turnaround. So, you know, Alex, I know Milan fans are dreaming of the Scudetto. It's very early, but, you know, Juve is not off to a great start. Inter doesn't look that great quite yet. So I've been thinking a lot about, you know, Milan has been in the Champions League for many years. The last team to win the Scudetto after not going to the Champions League for that long was Juve. So do you see some parallels between Pioli's Milan and Conte's first Juve? And in general, what do you see as being the main difference in this new Milan that we're seeing?
It's very hard to say, to see some parallels from Pioli and Conte, because they're so different.
Yeah?
So different. And no, I would not say. I can say they're similar. I think that Milan is still something that I don't understand really, because they look like a German team playing fast, and in fact Çalhanoğlu, for example, gives his best in this system. No, they have, I think, two players that are maybe two in the best five in Italy, which are one Ibrahimovic for sure, and the second is Theo Hernandez, which is something more, really something more.
Yeah.
There is, I don't know if they can win the Scudetto, probably not. They were helped by the fact that they don't play, they play behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Because, there is so less pressure, and when you play in San Siro, the pressure is high. It's so high.
Yeah.
Now that you can play without that pressure, it's easier for people. For such a young team, for example, I saw the data this morning, and in the Big Five tournament, Milan is the youngest team in the Big Five tournament. So, if you have such a young team, when you can play without pressure, I'm talking about the fans, but I'm talking about also no one thinks that Milan have to win the Scudetto or have to get into the back four. That's so you can play without pressure, and it's also a very strange championship this year, season, and anything can happen. Because if your mind is free, you can do anything.
For sure. Yeah, and important to know, we are recording, Alex and I, before Milan-Roma. So let's talk about Roma. I'm going to compare them to Lazio and ask you a little bit, between these two teams, who do you believe in more? I think Roma has some intriguing pieces, to say the least. Lazio improved their depth, for sure, but maybe they'll have a little bit of a hangover from last season. If you had to bet at the end of the season, which team do you think will be ahead?
I would pick Roma, because I like Fonseca. I like the way he plays, like the way he can change the system. I like his players, because they got Pedro, for example. Pedro is a kind of player that in Italy can still make a big difference.
Yeah,
and they have Dzeko, and we know Dzeko. Everybody wants Dzeko. He went to Inter. So
yeah,
and yes, if I have to pick one of the two, I say Roma. Lazio will have to play three times a week. That's not easy with the Champions League. A lot of energies that go away. It can be hard, because they're not used to. And I'm not so sure that the roster is so deep, because many players are not as good as who usually plays.
Yeah, for sure.
So if we talk about depth, yes, you should have, I don't know, 20 players all on the same level. Lazio doesn't have 20 players on the same level.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's talk about Napoli, who I have to say, when they are in the actual games, have maybe been Milan the most impressive team so far. So let me ask you, are you noticing some changes in the way Gattuso is managing his team? And especially in this COVID football environment, do you see Napoli as a legitimate factor in the Scudetto race?
Can I have a chance? Yeah. Can I have a chance? Because in my opinion, as one of the best roster in Italy. They have so many players, as we said before, 20 players, maybe 22, all on the same level. In the midfield, in attack, they have so many players. I don't think that Gattuso changed his style. He's always been, in my opinion, a very good manager. Now he has the players. Maybe he improved. Yes, maybe. But his roster improved. When you have the players, it's so much easier. As we said at the beginning, if Pirlo had Cristiano Ronaldo, probably he would have won all these matches. We would be here to talk about Pirlo. Ah, he's so good. He's one of the matches, you know?
Yeah.
If I can say, I didn't expect Napoli to have so many difficult matches because they were losing at Benevento.
Yeah.
I think they could easily win matches easier than they do.
I agree. They definitely have a very impressive squad. But there's one manager who is doing some small miracles with not a very talented squad. And Sampdoria has now collected 6 points playing against two teams that are representing Italy in the Champions League. So how impressed are you with Ranieri and what he's doing at Sampdoria right now?
I think we always forget what he did in Leicester.
Yeah.
We don't have to forget what he did in Leicester. He's a legend. I mean, we still treat him as, Ranieri, yes, he never won a Scudetto here, you know. But he's a legend. Maybe he's not Guardiola, he's not Mourinho, he's not Conte. But he is so smart. He treats his players like an old dad.
Yeah.
He smashes them when they need to be smashed, because that's what happened after the first match against Juventus. He said, "No, we can't play like this." Now he has the results, but he doesn't have a very good team. But they play so good because they never lose their mind. They're always there is always order in his 4-4-2. Such a smart manager, Ranieri.
Yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
Let's not forget about Leicester. Let's not forget that he coached Juventus. He coached Roma. He coached Inter. Such many teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. A legend to say the least. And a coach who maybe is a legend in the making is De Zerbi. You're a big fan. I love reading your articles on Sassuolo, where you break it down. I think they are maybe even more fun to watch than Atalanta right now. But I want to ask you this. Like, let's say Sassuolo hypothetically finds a way to get prime Nesta on their defense. Would that even matter? Or is De Zerbi's system just so not suited to the defensive phase? Like, what would happen if Sassuolo had prime Nesta on that defense? Would that make a huge difference or not, in your opinion?
That could help, because Marlon is not a young Nesta, but he's good. They didn't have him.
Yeah.
It would change. Because in that system, you need a very smart defender, a very quick defender. They don't have such a defender. because they have now he's playing Ferrari, which is good but not so good. Kirkes is playing. He scored against against Torino. He's playing very well, but he's not a prime Nesta. It would help as in every excellent team. There is always every manager needs. Needs a defender like that because I think of Piquet in Barcelona. I think in Sergio Ramos at Real Madrid. I think Nesta for sure. Koulibaly. They're all players that when you play in attacking football, you need someone that can cover 40 or 50 meters of pitch behind their shoulders. So it would change, yeah.
Okay. I want to ask you, before I let you go, two players on Sassuolo that really intrigue me. And you mentioned earlier that maybe Chiesa wasn't exactly what Juve needed. And I got a lot of criticism for saying that, in my opinion, if I had to choose between Chiesa and Locatelli for Juve, no questions asked, I would have taken
Locatelli.
Yeah. So what do you make of him as a player? I've seen that he's continuing to improve. I think he's becoming a really terrific regista type player. What do you make of Locatelli right now?
Fantastic player. We saw him also in the national team. He can do so many things. He can play one touch. He can play two touches. He can dribble. He has vision. He has everything. Now he scored two weeks ago, and if he starts scoring goals, we have a fantastic player here. Fantastic player.
Yeah.
I think yes. Juventus. I don't know if he was ready to play for Juventus in a system that is developing. Now he's in a system that is developed. And he knows what to do with and every time.
Absolutely.
So it would have been maybe difficult for him to adapt to Juventus.
Speaking of a player that came close to joining Juve at the beginning of career, Domenico Berardi, he's been great again since Calcio came back in the pandemic. I think he has 9 goals and 6 assists or something like that. He's been on fire, you know, when Berardi first broke out, there was talk that he could be the Italian Robin or whatnot. But what do you make of Berardi? And do you think staying at Sassuolo and playing from De Zerbi, do you think that's hurt his development? Or do you think he's developed just fine because he has such a great coach?
I think he's a player that needs to know what to do on the pitch. In fact, he was so good with Di Francesco. Back then, and now he's excellent with the Zerbi. He knows what to do. I think that his dimension is Sassuolo, I'm afraid, which can be maybe his limit. But he can take Sassuolo up there because he's doing so well. Yeah. When you see Sassuolo struggling, he always does something that helps the team. And I think that the thing that he improves most is his mind. He used to lose his mind sometimes. Now he doesn't. Now he's always focused on the match. He always knows what to do. I like him. I don't know if I like him so much, because I still think that he's, as I said, that his dimension is Sassuolo. But for Sassuolo, it's something more.
Absolutely. Well, Alex, I can't thank you enough. It's always a pleasure. I learn a ton talking to you about Calcio. Everyone check out Alex's great tweets at Alex Frosio. For those of you that read Gazzetta dello Sport, you all should if you love Calcio. Really great stuff. So, Alex, I can't thank you enough. Always great to chat with you, and I look forward to chatting with you again in the near future.
Thank you, David.